Want more of the Josh Scanlon podcast?
Please. Please.
Here you go. The Josh Scanlon podcast starts right now. Yeah! Welcome to Josh Scanlon podcast. It is Thursday, February 7th, 2019. We got a good one for you here today. I'm just going to read you one of the most, I tell you, it is the best article in financial planning ever written, in my humble, if you will, opinion, by Ty Bernicke. This will be part two of our three-part series on the most important financial planning concepts you need to understand, either as you're looking at your own stuff, you're firing your own financial advisor, you're talking to a financial advisor, or you're going to do your own financial planning. You got to understand how this stuff works, my friends. And the three articles that we're going to share with you are the one from Bill Bengen, which I talked about yesterday, and this one from Ty Bernicke called Retirement Reality Planning, A New Paradigm for an Old Science. Now, Ty had written this in the Journal for Financial Planning, and I'll put a link to it, on June of 2005. And so it's somewhat, I hate to say dated, because it's 15 years, going on 15 years old. But it's funny, he's at the very end, he says this. I thought this was interesting. He says, this advancement may hold the key in helping consumers realize more accurate projections on when they can retire and how much they need to fund this event. Any change that strays from the norm is typically met with skepticism and objection. However, it is change and only change that can advance a profession. That's the last two sentences of this article. Initially, it's funny because when he had written this and I had read it, and it was life-changing for me, that last two sentences didn't mean that much to me back then. And I reached out to Ty 2007, 2008, and he was nice, he was courteous, but he was reserved. He was reserved, no other way around that. And I won't say defensive, guarded. And I wondered why. And then I saw the article that Jonathan Clements had written. Somewhat, again, not challenging Ty, but it was just kind of like maybe you missed. It's not as negative as I'm making it seem, but it wasn't positive. Let's put it that way. Now, I wonder if Ty took it on the chin for his approach to financial planning, because no one else was talking about this. And now, since fast forward 15 years, the idea that you spend less in retirement than previous projections is pretty commonplace now. It's in the vernacular. Vanguard did research on this. My man David Blanchett, Wade Fowl, Michael Finke over at the stuff is out there now. And while it's not 100% common knowledge like the Bill Bengen 4% rule is now, is getting there, and it will be shortly. But it's funny because it made me think about Ignaz Semmelweis. You might not be familiar with Ignaz Semmelweis, and I wasn't until about 5-6 years ago. But he was a doctor in Vienna. I think it was in Vienna. And basically all these women were dying in labor, has given birth. And Ignaz said, you know, what the hell is going on here? This is in the 1800s. And so he did some studies, did some research, and he found that the doctors who were delivering the babies weren't washing their hands. And so they'd go deliver an affected woman's baby, and then they'd not wash their hands and go deliver a non-affected woman's baby. And that would inherently make that non-affected woman infected. And we'd have just multiple cases of women dying from delivering babies. And Semmelweis said, you know, what's going on? So he advocated washing your hands. And I mean, it sounds silly now, but he was literally taking on the powers that be. And one of the chief doctors in Europe at that point, you know, basically they chastised him. They kicked him out of polite society. And ultimately he met his death in a Looney Tunes home. I mean, there's no other way around that. And it just, he got put away into a mental hospital. And the sad thing is that now Semmelweis wasn't very strategically pragmatist, let's put it that way. It sounds like a very coarse personality, and he probably rubbed many people the wrong way. And he probably had some mental deficiencies, no other way around that. But he met his fate in that nursing home, and just that's where he died. And, you know, penniless And I just think of all the other people, the guy who challenged Ansel Keys. And Ansel Keys became prominent when Eisenhower had a heart attack. And and Eisenhower, chief secretary for, you know, doctor stuff, had read some research by Ansel Keys, a seven country study, which is completely fake. And any approach that, or any situation that reproached Ansel Keys back in the 70s and 80s was met with fierce resistance, to the point, again, you were banned from polite society in your chosen field. And we're seeing the same thing with climate change. I mean, I tell you, the idea that CO2 leads to global warming is silly. It's on its face. That's just simply not true. And yet, if you challenge that, you're a skeptic. Essentially, the Holocaust denier. Now, does warming lead to CO2? Probably. Does CO2 lead to global warming? No. But yet, if you stand up for that, you're a crazy man, and you're being banned from polite society. If you challenge the Michael Mann hockey stick, same thing. So we got so many different just instances of people standing up against the power structure and just getting badgered. And I'm not sure why it is. And so I just wonder if this will happen to Ty Bernicke. So it's very interesting. So in your own thought process, don't fall for the assumption that everything is known that is known about your own financial planning situation, because things change all the time. And sometimes, unfortunately, it just takes a while for it to get settled in. I mean, look at John Bogle, RIP. Bogle, he was with Wellington, the fund management company. He challenged the orthodox that active management works. But yet, look where he is today. But look where he was 40 years ago. I mean, he was not the cat's meow. So it's just interesting. So just remember, if you know what you see to be true, don't be shying of other evidence for the contrary. But don't be so vaccines, another one. I mean, my goodness. There's another example, vaccines. Do you know there's no study out there at all? The IOM, the Institute of Medicine, that says they published a study saying that the CDC recommended vaccine schedule is safe. And there is no study. Their own study even says that. It's explicit. And yet, if you say, well, before I give my kids 18 vaccinated shots back, I'd just like to see some evidence that's safe. And there is no study. That doesn't make you anti-vaccine. It just says, yeah, I don't know about that. And you can read the data. But again, if you were to challenge that, you're a crazy man. You're Jenny McCarthy, or you're, whoever, I forgot the guy's name, challenged Ansel Keys, or you're the guy who challenged Engel Semmelweis. I mean, or the guy, or Judith Curry, who challenged Michael Mann band of bullies and sexists. It's sad, actually. And so it's easy to fall along the herd. Don't do that, because if you were to do that, you'd miss Ty Bernanke, you'd miss Bill Bangin. All right, so back to the thing. Reality retirement planning, a new paradigm for an old science. And I'm just going to read this to you because I think it's pretty interesting. I won't read the whole thing, but would you like to implement an income planning technique that could help clients retire sooner, travel more, and spend more time enjoying their hobbies? This technique does not involve a magic investment or an unknown tax loophole. Instead, it simply requires making advancements to traditional retirement planning techniques. These advancements include adjusting spending estimates to reflect the U.S. Bureau of Labor's U.S. BLS Consumer Expenditure Survey, ultimately enabling consumers to develop projections that more accurately reflect their financial standing during retirement. The dramatically different spending tendencies between my firm's younger and older clients served as the catalyst for this study. Many of our younger retirees had problems spending within the income parameters of their retirement plans, while the majority of our older retirees were spending far less than what they could afford. It is, in my opinion, that these spending tendencies hold the key to a much larger picture, which includes creating more realistic retirement projections by making adjustments to the traditional retirement planning approach. Traditional retirement income planning generally assumes that a household's expenditures during retirement increase by a certain percentage each year to reflect historical inflation. This type of planning usually results in increasingly high withdrawals from the retiree's nest egg to help sustain inflation-adjusted expenses. Reality retirement planning is similar to the traditional approach in that it does increase spending for inflation, but the strategy differs from the traditional approach because it assumes that a household's real spending needs decrease incrementally throughout retirement. Reality retirement planning is like a tug-of-war match, with inflation pulling spending needs up and human nature's tendency pulling spending needs back down. Ultimately, this tug-of-war more accurately depicts the average American spending patterns throughout history. There are many supplemental sources confirming the inverse relationship between age and spending. One is the BLS, and I've talked about the Consumer Expenditure Survey many, many times. And so here's Ty looking back at 2002, because he had written this in 2005, and it's the same thing as it is today. By far, in a way, the biggest expenditure for every retiree is housing. Nothing comes close. Nothing comes close. By far, in a way. But you'll see things like apparel and services, entertainment, even food and alcohol drops like a brick in water. Housing even drops like a brick in water, but that just shows you how high it was relative to the overall cost of living while you're younger. But it's still, without question, it's just hugely more expensive than anything else, even though it drops by 50%. Transportation drops by 66%. Miscellaneous drops by 40%. Insurance and pensions drops by 80%. The only thing that goes up is healthcare, and that goes up by about 40% from $2,550 a year when you're 45 to 50 to $3,500 a year when you're 75. Now that is in 2002 numbers, but it does increase without question. So the number two expenditure, and the same thing is in today as it was in 2002, after housing, was food and alcohol. Number two, actually in transportation, was number two. When you're 65 to 74, the number two most expensive cost was transportation, with food and alcohol number three, and healthcare a distant fourth. Actually, no, a distant fifth, right behind miscellaneous. When he hits 75, healthcare becomes a number two in expenditures, but not much ahead of food and alcohol, transportation, miscellaneous. They're both within the 3,000 range, where housing is still $8,000. So again, by far and away, housing is the biggest expense. While the U.S. BLS Consumer Expenditure Survey can be a useful resource for obtaining a basic understanding of spending patterns, these statistics do have limitations. And one limitation is the absence of health of long-term care costs. And for example, a person in a nursing home is unlikely to participate in a survey from the BLS. And this would give the healthcare expenditure category artificially low average expenses. So what he's saying here is, look, people in nursing homes are not going to be participating in this BLS survey. Thus, that will discount the actual true level of healthcare costs. And that would be, you would think that's true, unfortunately, or fortunately, I should say, when you look at EBRI, the Employee Benefits Research Institute, and other groups who have actually done real world studies, we find that the long-term care costs just aren't that big of a deal for the vast majority of people. Yes. There are people it kills them. Financially doom them for sure, but not for the vast majority. Not enough for you to sit there and say, I can't retire today because healthcare costs. I'm telling you, unless there's a reason for you to do that. But it's not enough where you say, oh, this right here study is now not legitimate because of potential healthcare catastrophic costs. It's just not worth doing it. All right, so let's see. Before incorporating decreased spending into the planning process, here we go. Most of this research corresponds with an article by Tacchino and Salzman in 1999, which concludes that the current models used for retirement planning overstate the amount of financial resources needed for retirement. I agree with their contention that incorporating consumer expenditure survey data into the retirement planning process will create a more realistic plan. Before incorporating decreased spending into the planning process, though, it is necessary to address some potential conflicts with this procedure. The first potential conflict is to explore what help determine whether these changes happen voluntarily or necessary or out of necessity. We will address whether these patterns can be attributed to spending difference among the generations analyzed. Voluntary reductions in spending, or are you forced to spend less? And again, some of the naysayers to say, oh, the reason they're spending less is because they're forced to. Well, let's take a look at the research. Tacchino and Salzman indicate that those 75 and over spend less than those 65 to 74 years old, despite maintaining similar levels of income. So their income, according to Tacchino and Salzman, hasn't gone down. It's just their spending has gone down. Interesting. So they're not being forced to spend less, i.e. running out of money. Ultimately, this information would imply that lower spending happens voluntarily rather than out of necessity. While this analysis appears to have offered a logical conclusion, one could argue that many retirees liquidate investments and other assets for income when they retire, which may not show up as income upon liquidation. I completely agree with that. You're saying, hey, I'm liquidating IRA assets, non-taxable assets, and it's not showing up as part of my liquidation, and thus is misleading in terms of the income and asset base I have. But These assets could include non-qualified CDs, mutual funds, low or no gains, Roth IRAs, anything that has after tax with little or no appreciation, so it doesn't show on a 1040. Therefore, it would be possible for consumers' income to stay consistent while expenditures drop. Further analysis of the Census Bureau's Household Economic Study of Median Net Worth addresses this, though, and is summarized in this table. This table separates net worth results into five quintiles based on the income levels of the household surveyed. Essentially, the purpose of this table is to determine whether shrinking assets could be blamed for lower expenditures. And what we'll see, we have five different quintiles, lowest, second, third, fourth, fifth, and then we're looking at their median net worth. And so we're looking at a group of age 55 to 64, 65 to 69, 70 to 74, and then 75 plus. So let's use the third quintile. Their median net worth when they're 55 to 64 was $100,000. From 65 to 69 was $155,000. From 70 to 74 was $201,000. And then from 75 plus is $226,000. That gives an example. So their net worth has gone up as they get older. It happens for all five quintiles. So we're going back to the lowest quintile, their net worth is $21,000. And when they hit 75 and above, it's $46,000. The highest quintile, their net worth was $316,000. And then it hits $569,000 when we get to 75 and above. Not one quintile of income did their net worth decrease, which illustrates that the median net worth for households increases with age for every income quintile analyzed. If net worth is increasing and spending is decreasing, one could surmise the decreases in spending happen voluntarily rather than out of necessity. This analysis, coupled with Ticino and Saltzman income research, provides strong evidence that people spend less by choice as their age increases. Now, I would argue, though, this, and that Bernicke doesn't, but I would say, look, just because your net worth is increasing doesn't mean your liquid net worth is. Maybe you have a house and your house poor because you got all the equity, but you don't have any cash flow. And this would be the case where a reverse mortgage is a wonderful tool. And reverse mortgages are relatively, I mean, they've been around since the late 80s, but generally speaking, no one was using them until probably 10 years ago or so. But if your income is down because you're blown through your liquid net worth and you still have a net worth that's growing due solely to your home, it's insane not to turn that to a cash flow somehow. It's sitting there as an untapped asset. Yes, you're getting free rent, but you can get free rent on reverse mortgage too. While there appears to be strong evidence supporting voluntary reductions in spending, one could contend that these spending changes are attributed to generational differences. I'm not going to dive too deep in there. Bernicke does studies looking at the depression babies, basically when they retire versus baby boomers, and essentially the spending decreases both at the same rate. So there's no difference between people who are raised in depression with no apples versus people who are raised in affluence of the baby boomers. The spending decreases for both groups, even as they age, regardless of what your background was. All right. So now he uses hypothetical illustration. He's using husband and wife who are both 55. They both want to retire now. They both have 30-year life expectancy, so they're going to live until they're 85. We're using a 3% inflation. Our annual expenditures are $60,000, okay? So, again, 55, we're going to live for 30 years. We're going to spend $60,000 a year, of which $24,000 of that $60,000 will come from Social Security once we reach the age of 62. Social Security will only increase at 2% a year, whereas our inflation is increasing at 3% a year. So there's a widening gap between Social Security and then how much the cost of living in terms of inflation. We got $800,000 in our total 401k, and we're going to get a hypothetical rate of return of 8%, which you might be on the high end, but that's okay because there's a method to the madness here. The necessary withdrawals are deducted from the 401k balance annually to help sustain the consumer's estimated expenditures. So again, in the initial part, they need $60,000. They hit 62, they'll need $34,000 or $36,000 once Social Security kicks in, if that makes sense. And we're going to adjust those for inflation. Distributions are used to cover the shortage of income for spending needs and taxes. That's a big deal because the average tax rate before the age of 62 is 15.3, which is state and feds. And these folks live in Wisconsin, which is where my man Ty was in Milwaukee. And then it's 9.6% after, that's their effective tax rate after the age of 62. Let's see here. The spending need, okay, so we're going to talk, now we're going to run Monte Carlo analysis of 5,000 different hypothetical projections. We're only going to use a 7% standard deviation with an 8% rate of return. I would use a much higher standard deviation, probably twice that, but we'll run with it. Because again, it's both sides of this. It's not one side is favorable, one side is less. It doesn't matter. But Again, we got two different scenarios. One, the traditional retirement planning. We need $60,000 the first year. And we're going to just say each and every year for 3%. The second is we're going to reduce our expenditures by a certain amount based on the CA, the Consumer Expenditure Survey. And that's what we're going to use. So basically one's going up by 3% each year. The other one is there's like a tug of war. It's going up by 3% inflation, but it's actually going down because we spend a little bit less each and every year in retirement. So in the first year, the traditional spending, again, we got $800,000. We pull $60,000 out, but we got to pay tax on that. So our initial distribution is $70,000, a little bit more than $70,000. After the end of the year, we're left with $791,000. The same thing happens in the first year on the reality retirement planning as well. Now we go to 62 when Social Security kicks in. We have a portfolio balance of $664,000 at 62, but we need $73,792 of income to live on in the traditional retirement planning. So $73,000, but we only need to take $53,000 because Social Security now is kicking in, but we still got to account for taxes. So $53,000 comes out of there and our portfolio is left with $662,000 after that 8% growth. That's the traditional side. On the reality side, though, we only need $35,000 of income simply because our income needs are being reduced. $35,000 of portfolio distribution because our income needs are being reduced. In fact, we need $57,000 in total income in this regard. So in the reality retirement spending, where we're reducing our income with age, we only need $57,000. The traditional, we need $73,000. That's a pretty significant difference. The traditional side, we needed to pull $53,000 from the portfolio. And the reality retirement spending, we only need to put $35,000. So let's fast forward to 70. In 70, in the traditional, we needed $93,500. We got to pull $70,000 from the portfolio to make up the difference and pay for taxes. In reality retirement spending, we only need $56,000 of income for spending needs, of which we only need to pull $37,000 out of the portfolio to account for income need, gap, and taxes. So we'll keep going down. And now we're at 81 years old. We have no money left in their traditional 401k/IRA. We need $129,000 and we have nothing left. We're done. We have a failure late rate in this regard of 87%. So 13% of the times we succeeded, 87% of the times we don't. The median time is we ran out of money when we're 80 years old. On the other hand, at 85 years old in the reality retirement planning, we needed $67,963 of income, but we have a $100,000 coming from the IRA or the 401k to cover required minimum distributions and taxes and the income that we need. So we have more coming out from the portfolio than we buy almost by 2-to-1 than actually what we need because our spending has reduced so much. The differences between the traditional approach and the reality approach are substantial. The traditional approach tends to indicate a much later retirement or decreased spending potential in the early years. This approach also gives the average American household an unrealistic view of their future by overstating what they need for savings. Reality retirement planning more accurately portrays the spending habits of the average American household. Incorporating these statistics into a client's financial plan can give a more accurate retirement projection. This advancement may hold the key to helping consumers realize more accurate projections on when they can retire and how much they need to fund it. In addition to helping consumers more accurately predict their income needs, this research can have large implications of other areas of financial planning. More accurate projections can enable a consumer to determine the appropriate steps to achieve a specific goal in estate planning, tax reduction, and investment management. We're not going to talk about that. Everybody talks about that. In conclusion, the inverse relationship between age and spending has serious implications for traditional retirement planning. To address these concerns, sophisticated strategies should be considered if accuracy is important. I love that little ding on the industry. If accuracy is not important, keep using your 4% a year, adjust each year with inflation. Not banging on Bill Bangin, but banging on, look, what are we basing that on? I mean, what are we basing on for you specifically when it comes to retirement planning? Reality retirement planning accommodates spending differences by deviating from normal retirement planning procedures. And this advancement may hold the key to helping consumers realize more accurate projections on when they can retire and how much they need to fund it. So let's just go back to a couple. Basically, a couple things. On the traditional retirement plan, they could retire at 55 if they reduce their spending by 20% for the rest of their life. Reality retirement planning says they don't need to reduce their retirement spending and they could retire at 55. Or if they want to keep that level of expenditures of $60,000, they could work for another 7 years under the traditional approach. So the traditional approach said, you got two things to do, Mr. and Mrs. Smith. You can keep working for seven more years to spend that $60,000 a year that you want, or you can retire now and spend $48,000. What will it be? And here comes me. I said, no, forget that. Because of the consumer expenditure surveys, we think you can retire now at 55 and spend that $60,000 a year. Well, what if we're wrong? What if we're wrong by 50%? So what if Ty's off by 50%? All right. We still got $1.15 million in our portfolio when we're 85 years old. I mean, we're still doing just fine at that point. And so even if we're off by 50%, the numbers speak for themselves in terms of your ability to maybe rethink your retirement plan. All right, so I did a video earlier on firecalc.com. If you're interested in this, how to run these numbers for yourself, man, go to firecalc.com because it's awesome. It gives you Ty Bernicki's reality retirement spending. It's just all kinds of stuff. It's all free. Highly recommend donate to those guys because it's flipping awesome. But do read this. I'll put the link in the show notes. Think about how this could affect you if you're sitting there in your crappy old job. You're like, I don't know, man. I think I need this. Well, think about it again and again just to get a gauge. It might not be right for you. I don't know. But don't get so caught up in the traditional approach when now, 15 years later, the traditional approach is being challenged left and right now. And it's only a matter of time for the Ty Bernickis of the world who set the world on fire with this article. Get the special props that they deserve for challenging the prevailing orthodox was simply left a lot to be desired. All right. As always, like what you see, subscribe, go on to iTunes, wherever you get your podcast. Give me a rating, give me a thumbs up, and share the podcast, share the YouTube channel, and we'll see you guys next time. Thanks now.